Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of the day for the second day of Rosh Chodesh Elul, the first of Elul. And today we get a chance to have a discussion with the Avnei Nezer, the Avnei Nezer of Avraham of Sukhachev, a 19th century Hasidic Rebbe. He was the Sukhachev Rebbe, who was also a well-known Talmid Chacham, wrote many important works, including especially the Eglei Tal, which is a book on Hilchot Shabbat. So a well-known Posek and his shoot, his response, Avnei Nezer, occasionally before I've come across one with the date on it, but never the right match for us to study together. But today, from Rosh Chodesh Elul of Tuf Resh Mem Zayin, which is 1887 in Sukhachev, he wrote a tshuva about the following case. There was a certain courtyard that they used to, in this town, whatever town was writing him a letter, where they used to shecht birds. They didn't shecht large animals, they shechted birds there. And you'd have two or three people, shochtim, would go together. One would show his friend the shochet the knife. The other shochet would check the knife for him. Then it was okay. And then he would check, because you're supposed to check the knife before you shkita. So if you have somebody standing there, they can do it for each other and they can save time. And somebody had lent money to a shochet, who had then had taken it as what's called the mashkanta bin achaita. Mashkanta bin achaita means that you get to use the collateral and that eats down on the loan. So the person who borrowed the money can repay the loan whenever they want to, but as long as they're not repaying the loan, it is being slowly eaten into. So let's say the loan was $1 million, and this place was worth $20,000 a year, then for 50 years, they could use it as a mashkanta d'nachaita. So some kind of arrangement like that. Now, this place, though, was within a larger courtyard. So there were yorshim, the person who had taken the collateral, had some heirs who were heirs to this particular part of the courtyard, but then there are other heirs who are heirs of the larger part of the courtyard. How that worked in terms of the inheritance isn't clear, but there's a partnership there. So there was a bunch of years where they would shecht in this courtyard, and then nobody complained about it, nobody said anything about it. That was the arrangement. Eventually, the government had decided that when you're going to do shechita, when you're going to do ritual slaughter, you have to do it in an enclosed building. And the thing they were worried about was that the blood from the shechita, from the ritual slaughter, shouldn't be visible. It shouldn't go outside anywhere. It'd be in this room and taken care of in this room, and however it was disposed of, it would all be within this enclosed area. So that happened. So for more than 20 years, they had this arrangement. So you had a larger courtyard, and you have some people who own that larger courtyard, and they're in some sort of partnership with the people who own this smaller place, with the shochtim, who are the ritual slaughterers, who own this place. And you have a standing situation. Then the building burnt down. So now the building burnt down, so the people who had been using that building, they want to rebuild it. Why do they want to rebuild it? They want to rebuild it because they want to have this place to do shechita within this town, at least of birds. But the other members of the courtyard, the other owners of the rest of the courtyard, see an opportunity to say that they don't want it rebuilt. And they say that it's like there are certain places in halacha. If somebody wants to create a new lavatory facility or a house of that will produce a lot of bad smell, that they can say that you're not allowed to. And the fact that you have a chazaka of having done it, you've already been doing it for a long time, isn't always relevant and can sometimes be ignored or rejected. So that's what they're claiming. So the question is, what do you do about this? So in his answer, the Avnei Nezer starts off by saying that, noting that the person who wrote him the tshuva, wrote him the question, had given him a bunch of reasons why he thought the shochtim had the right to rebuild this house. So one of them was that the Mechaber in Shulchan Aruch, in Kuf Nun Vav, in Choshen Mishpat, Kuf Nun Vav, says that if you have a courtyard of people, this is the question. We have a courtyard of people, they're all sharing a certain space. Some of them has a private space, and in this private space, what are the limits on what I can do that my neighbors don't have the right to complain about? So one standard is that anything that is a Dvar Mitzvah, if the thing that this person wants to do is a matter of mitzvah, is an obligation of some sort, then they can't complain about it, the neighbors. So a classic example that I think we've seen in another tshuva together is, let's suppose somebody wants to start a school, and in this school, they're going to have little kids coming in and out. So the halacha is that you can't stop them, even though they're going to make some noise, even though it's going to bother them. So we did see a tshuva about having a shul in a place like this. So that halacha is going to come up here, because the man writing the question to the Avnei Nezer says, well, shechita is also a mitzvah, a ritual slaughter, because if you want to be able to eat meat, or in this case it'll have to be birds, so it'd be chickens or ducks, if you want to eat fowl, F-O-W-L, you need a shechita, it's a mitzvah, and therefore other people shouldn't be allowed to complain about it. You should be allowed to set up a slaughterhouse in this courtyard, and they, you know, in your area of the courtyard, they should be able to complain, because there has an issue of arevut. Arevut is that all Jews are responsible for each other. So if all Jews are responsible for each other, then the fact that somebody else wants to do a mitzvah means I have some stake in it, and I can't complain or protest or object to your trying to perform this mitzvah. And then he quotes a Tvuot Shor, which is an important sefer in terms of issues of shechita and kashrus and things like that. The Tvuot Shor talks about the question of birchat shechita. Birchat shechita is the bracha you make on a shechita. So let's say there's a shochet who wants to shecht and he can't make the bracha for some reason. Can I make the bracha for that person? So ordinarily, we can make brachas for each other because of arevut, because we are responsible for each other. So if there's a Jew who needs to make a bracha and they don't know how to, I'm allowed to make it for them. But the Tvorot Shor said, it's not like birchat hamotzi. In the case of birchat hamotzi, the halacha is you're not really supposed to make it for other people unless you're about to eat something yourself. So the Torah says the reason for that, there's that separation, because there's no actual mitzvah to do the eating. So if this person wants to eat bread, they don't want to make a bracha on the bread, and they can't make it on their own, even if I sort of say the words to them, except for Hashem Elokeinu Melech HaOlam, right? If I just read it out, they can't do it anyway. I can say, well, don't eat, and then you won't have a problem. So there, we say that I'm not allowed to make a bracha for them unless it's true that I'm going to make that bracha. But Torah says, but that doesn't have to be true of shechita, right? When shechita, when the person shechts the animal, when the person slaughters a bird, so that is fulfilling a mitzvah right there, and the shechita itself is a mitzvah. So the Torah says, v'zavachta, you have to, if you want to eat, you have to slaughter it in the proper way, and so therefore in the actual shechita, he's doing a mitzvah, and therefore we are raving for each other. So there's no reason why we shouldn't, and there's no reason to stop him, and therefore it would seem like they're connected to each other, and therefore you're allowed to do it. And when you have mitzvahs that come your way, the Tvuot Shor had said, like tzitzis, for example, it's not appropriate to try to avoid keeping them. You should just keep the mitzvah. So here too, you could say, well, why not just not do shechita? So the Tvuot Shor is saying that there's no reason to avoid it, and therefore I have an arevut, I have an obligation to my fellow Jew to help the fellow Jew perform a mitzvah, and therefore I can make the bracha on the shechita. That's the way the Tvuot Shor read it. The Avnei Nezer now is saying, b'mechilas kvod Torah toharama, he's a great Torah scholar, he's a great gadol of the Tvuot Shor, he doesn't buy it. Because he says, arevut, this responsibility Jews have for each other, that's for a person who's not bucky, who doesn't know how to do it on his own, he can be motzi him. So that's why, he says, some gaonim held, and this is in the Shulchan Aruch, in Reish Ayin Gimel, says that a person can make kiddush for other people, even though he's not eating for them, as long as they don't know how to make the bracha. And if he didn't make a kiddush for himself, then he, whatever. But he can make kiddush for them as long as they don't know. But if they know, so they can. The afal pi, the Avnei Nezer says, the afal pi sheyatzah motzi, that's only when they don't know how to do it. And the reason is, because if they know how to do it, then the arev is not mechuyav, is not obligated to do it with him. So it would be like, the word arev then becomes very appropriate, because an arev is a guarantor of a loan. So a guarantor of a loan is not generally obligated to repay the loan unless the borrower doesn't have the money. But if the borrower has the money, then the borrower pays it. So here too, when we say that we're arevim for other people and we can help them do mitzvah because we're arev for them, because we are their guarantors in mitzvah, as it were. Now, usually we don't read it that way. Usually we read arev not as guarantor, we read arev as like also responsible. But if it's a question of guarantors, then if they can do it on their own, they have to do it on their own. How does that relate to our situation? And he says, and so therefore, his point is that it's not true that we have the same obligation to each other in terms of shechita. They're not the same kind of a mitzvah in terms of those things, because here we're talking about shochtim, so they do know how to do it, and if the people don't know how to do it, then it's not clear that we have to do it the same way for them, because that's not a mitzvah that's obligatory on them. And then he points out that when it comes to the whole question of avoiding mitzvot, if we can, and how we shouldn't. And the whole idea that you shouldn't find ways to avoid it, he points out, if you look in Shari Tshuva, Rabbi Yonah says that with tzitzis, even if you don't have a beged of arba kanfo, you don't have a piece of a garment that has four corners to it. So that's when the Gemara Menachot says you get a punishment for not wanting bilvavo, you want not in your heart the lo yofi ha mitzvah to embrace the obligation. But if the shochet is bucky, the Avnei Ezer now says, then there's no arivut, because that's only if he's not bucky, he doesn't know what he's doing in the shochet. If he's not a bucky, then the lack of doing it doesn't show anything. Meaning, when it comes to tzitzis, the avoidance of the mitzvah comes from not wearing the garment. But you don't need any special knowledge to wear a garment. You just need to have a garment like that and have some tzitzis on it. So theoretically, you could argue, well, what if I don't know how to put a tzitzis on it, and therefore I'm going to avoid wearing it because I have no garment with tzitzis on it? But that's not the case that Avnei Ezer is talking about. He's assuming that you can find a garment like that. But when it comes to shechita, either I know how to shecht or I don't know how to shecht. If I know how to shecht, then there is no arivut, because he's just shown to his satisfaction that the whole concept of arivut from the Kiddush example only applies when the person doing the mitzvah doesn't know how to do it. Now, that's something that I don't think people always know. That would be a question. So, for example, I think it's very common for men to make Kiddush for women who don't choose to make Kiddush, even after the men themselves have already made Kiddush for themselves. So that gets to be a complicated question now, as we find out the Avnei Ezer is pointing out that it's really only if they don't know what they're doing. But if they know what they're doing and they're obligated to Kiddush on their own, then they maybe think should make Kiddush on their own. So that's a whole question of its own. But if it's only applying to people who don't know, and once they know, there's no more Arevut, then if a person knows how to do Shkita, there's no reason I have to do Shkita for them. They know what they're doing, and I'm not an Arev for them. I'm not even obligated to help them out in the same way. And if they don't know what they're doing, so then they're not avoiding the mitzvah by not having Shkita or by not Shechting. They're just not able to do the mitzvah, and that's not an avoidance of it. So it's not the same level of my need to get involved with them. That's where the Avnei Ezer is reading it. And therefore, when the Tshuva Shor tries to prove again from tzitzis that even though you might have thought you could say, well, don't wear tzitzis, you won't have a bracha, he says again, it's not the same. Because a beged of arba kanfo, a garment, if it doesn't have tzitzis, you can wear it, according to some opinions. He quotes a Bach. The Bach in Yoredeya makes this claim that I don't think we paskin like this in halacha, but the Bach says, it seems to him, this is in Yoredeya Resh Pei Chet, 288, the Bach says, it seems to me there's a commentary on the tour. If the only option a person has for a mezuzah is an invalid mezuzah, a mezuzah psula. I think the psula might only be the Rabbana, but a mezuzah psula. He says, don't put it up at all, because if you don't put it up at all, it'll push the person to make sure to get a kosher mezuzah. And therefore, he says also, here, right, even if you don't make a bracha, you should do it that way, because if you put up any kind of mezuzah, then it'll delay your efforts. Meaning, if somebody walks into their house every day and sees no mezuzah, they'll feel bad about it, and they'll try to find a way to put up a mezuzah. But if they have a possible mezuzah, they'll make all sorts of excuses. And the way the Bach says it is, if he doesn't have mezuzah at all, we tell him not to put it up because it's not good enough. So then, nafsho aguma, he'll be sad and distraught that he lives in a home where there's no mezuzah, and he'll try to find a mezuzah that's kosher. That being true, coming back to the Avnei Ezer now, he says, so if you don't have tzitzis, if you can't put up the tzitzis on the four corners of your garment because you don't have them, the Avnei Ezer assumes that the Bach's version would be that we can therefore wear the garment, just knowing that we're not fulfilling the mitzvah, knowing there's a problem. But that's an interesting thing, because the obligation to put up a mezuzah is a positive obligation. The obligation to wear tzitzis is not a positive obligation, but you might have thought there was also sort of a prohibition against wearing it, just like there might be some kind of prohibition against living in the house, but the Avnei Ezer is not going that way. The Avnei Ezer is assuming that if somebody doesn't have tzitzis, they can wear the garment, they'll just feel bad, and hopefully they will rush to find a way to get tzitzis on the garment. And therefore he says, V'chol shekei, the Avnei Ezer says, kol shekein shleit akev milil bosh avor bracha. And all the more so that we wouldn't say that the lack of a bracha, not knowing how to make a bracha, would lead you to not wear the garment. So that means that if somebody doesn't know the bracha on tzitzis, they can wear it anyway. And if that's true, they're going to wear it anyway, then that's why we're arivim for them, because they're going to do it anyway, and then we have to make the bracha. But with shkita, if they don't know how to do shkita, right? When the Tzvot Shor is saying I can make the bracha for them, if they don't know how to do shkita, then he can't eat. So he can't eat meat. So I'm not an Ari for him. Why do I need to be an Ari for him? He has no particular obligation to eat meat. And then he quotes several sources to point out that exact idea, that there is no, in fact, specific obligation to eat meat. There is no obligation to eat meat, and therefore there's no obligation, specific obligation to eat shkita, to do shkita. The obligation of shkita is if one wants to eat meat, then one has to do shkita. So therefore the whole arivut issue comes up, and therefore he thinks it's not the same. So when it comes to a melamed in a courtyard, a teacher in a courtyard, there's an obligation to teach Jewish children Torah. So when the, and everybody has the obligation, so therefore the other members of the courtyard can't say, well, the kids coming to school every day are bothering us with their noise. That they can't say, because there is an obligation. They are arivim for that, for making sure that mitzvah gets fulfilled, but not in the case of shkita. But shkita is the kind of a mitzvah where if you want to eat meat, then eat meat with shkita. But if you don't, you don't. And there's nobody else has the obligation to make sure that you have obligation to make sure that you have meat to be eaten. Then he points out another question that the Taz had asked. The Taz had said, I don't understand why we talk about a malamed. What about, the Gemara seems to say, the Shulchan Aruch seems to say, you can't be a rofe or an uman. You can't be, a rofe is a doctor, an uman might be like a bloodletter, but somebody in the medical field. And there he said, the halacha is that the people in the mavoi can object if they, you know, have never had this before. And the sma, the sefer mitzvah, Mi'irat Einayim, which is also a commentary on Choshen Mish, but it said when we say a rofe, we don't mean a moel, we don't mean somebody who does circumcision, because somebody who does circumcision is actually doing a mitzvah, and therefore they couldn't complain about that. So somebody's going to say, I'm going to be a moel, and I'm going to have circumcisions going on, you know, weekly or daily in this courtyard, they couldn't complain about it. That wouldn't be, that's not something they complain about. He's talking about an actual doctor, Rofe Cholim. So the Taz says, how can you say that a doctor can't do it? A doctor, that's a big mitzvah, right? What's the mitzvah? It's an aseh and a lo taseh. It puts aside Shabbat, probably when there's pikuach nefesh issues in it, and therefore, why wouldn't you be allowed to have that in the dark, in the courtyard? So this, the Taz had said that it could be that the answer is they can say to him, why don't you go to their houses, you can make house calls. Now, the Avdei Nezer's response to that is interesting halachically, but also it sort of reminds us of issues about house calls just in general medical practice today, because the Avdei Nezer says that only works, that answer to the Taz only works in a small city. Because in a small city, he can go to their, everybody's homes without a problem, but in a big city, the Avnei Nezer says, and I know the Taz lived in, you know, much earlier, so maybe cities were smaller, and maybe medical practices were smaller, but the Taz says, the Avnei Nezer says, you can't do it in a big city, because you've got lots and lots of sick people, and there's not enough time to go to them. So that comes up today also, when doctors refuse to make house calls in our time, people take it as a sign of their lack of interest. But the Avnei Nezer is saying, well, people have limited time. People have limited time. They have limited time. So you can't expect them to wait to spend their time on a house call when that means there are going to be three other sick people they won't get a chance to see. So that's something to really think about. It's not always exactly the same way. And different doctors are in different situations, but it raises the question. In our context, it raises the question also of why in a particular courtyard wouldn't it be true that you can have a regular doctor establish a practice and the other members of the courtyard would be not allowed to complain, because it's a mitzvah that he's doing, right? And then he points out that the Beis Yosef quotes cites the Rambam's opinion that when we talk about a courtyard and establishing a courtyard, it's any matter of mitzvah, but then adds, but lelomda umnus, but to teach him a trade, which we've seen in another context where the Rav Moshe Feinstein's had a discussion about whether the Rambam really thought there was a mitzvah to teach a kid a trade. That's another tshuva that we've seen together. But in our context, lelomda umnus, to teach him a trade, the Rambam says, is not included in what you're allowed to do in the courtyard. So that's odd, the Avnei Nezer says, because we have a Gemara in Shabbos that says that on Shabbos, discussions that we're allowed to have is that you can make an agreement to teach your child a trade, and that's not considered mimtso cheftecha. It's not considered a bad, a kind of discussion that's your own business matters, and therefore usher on Shabbos, to cheftei shamayim hu, because it is cheftei shamayim. It's what Hashem wants as well. And Rashi there says it's a mitzvah like kiddushin, like finding a wife for the child. Here it's finding him Torah. You teaching Torah without a profession is a problem. It's like teaching him, it's like setting him up for a life of crime. So therefore teaching him a trade is an important thing. So the other needed question is, so if you're going to tell me that teaching a regular trade is part of the Torah's requirements, and that's how the Rambam seems to postulate, that's how the other Nezer seems to assume it, that part of what parents have to do is make sure their children have a proper trade, So then why couldn't the member of a courtyard say, I am establishing a school to teach this trade to students, and they're coming in, and you can't stop me because this is a mitzvah as well. And therefore, the Avnezer says that he thinks the whole idea that a courtyard is usable for mitzvot, and you have to use it for mitzvot, and the neighbors cannot disagree and cannot object, he says that was only in terms of the takana of Yehoshua ben Gamla. The takana of Yehoshua ben Gamla was that you had to make sure to teach Jewish children. And the worry was that if you didn't make sure to teach Jewish children, then people wouldn't learn Torah, and Yachzor HaDavar LeKil Kulo. You'd have a situation where we'd go back to this thing, meaning Yehoshua ben Gamla made his rule of mandatory public education because not enough people were teaching Torah, because parents weren't doing their job in terms of teaching, actually fathers weren't doing their particular obligation to teach their sons Torah. Yehoshua ben Gamla said, okay, have mandatory public education. That's how we're going to make sure that Jewish children know the Torah they need to know. If we don't allow that in courtyards and say that that can be wherever somebody sets up a courtyard, then the takana will go by the wayside, because everybody will object and say, I don't want kids in my backyard. I don't want this here. I don't want this here. And you won't have a place to do it. And then it won't happen. And then it'll go back to the original situation. And therefore, he said it became part of the takana. Part of the ruling was that it could be anywhere I want. But the Avnezer says he thinks that any other mitzvot, that you can do it in other places. So then there was no right of a particular person in a particular courtyard to insist that it be there and that it's his right to do it. So it's not true, the Avnezer is now suggesting, that any courtyard has to agree. But for other mitzvot that could be fulfilled elsewhere and that we have no reason to think couldn't be fulfilled elsewhere, then there's no right to establish my own place in the courtyard. That's what he says. So those who include other mitzvot, they think the Avnezer is suggesting that if we don't include other mitzvot, then tidbatel ha-mitzvah, the mitzvah will go away, and people won't do it. And therefore, you have to allow it in this courtyard for other mitzvot as well. So in all those things, the Avnezer says, that would only be in mitzvot where there's no bodily need for it, like writing a Sefer Torah. So if somebody's a sofer, you could say, listen, as a sofer, you're allowed to do it in your courtyard because we're not going to stop you, because if we don't let you do it, then it might not get done, and people aren't going to necessarily insist on writing Sefer Torah because they don't absolutely need Sefer Torah. But when it comes to medicine or learning a profession, he says, those are the kinds of things that even non-Jews do. So if even non-Jews do it, we don't have to worry that people do it or not, which is a fascinating insight into human psychology, right? His point is that the halacha of, it's part of Hilchot Shechinim, the halacha that within a courtyard, neighbors can't object to certain uses and mitzvah uses. He's now saying, well, yeah, but there are mitzvot that everybody will do even if we don't allow them to do it here. And there are mitzvot that they won't do. So the mitzvot they won't do unless it's convenient, or that we worry that people won't do, that if somebody decides to do it in a particular place, the other residents of the courtyard are not allowed to object. But if it's ordinary things that everybody does, including non-Jews, like learning a trade, getting medical treatment, so there we're not worried that even if the members of a particular courtyard object, we're not worried that it won't happen. And therefore, we don't say that they're not allowed to object. According to that, the Avnezer seems to think at first that we don't have to worry about shechita because people like to eat meat. So even if I don't allow shechita, even if I don't allow ritual slaughter in this particular courtyard, they're going to find a way to eat meat because people like meat. So, but the letter writer had said that in Plotsk, which is where they were living at the time, and this is, I think we said 1887, so it's relatively far along in the sad history of Eastern Europe and people's loss of connection to religion. So in Plotsk, he says, there are people who, if you don't have shkita close by, they'll eat without shkita. And therefore, he thought, the rabbi writing the letter, that it's an important mitzvah to keep people from eating non-kosher meat, and therefore it becomes more like the children who need Torah education or the writing of a Sefer Torah. He's saying, so the courtyard neighbors should be allowed to object, because unless we have the shechita here in town, in this convenient place, people won't bother with shechita. So we have the Nezer says, well, but the people who are ksherim, who wouldn't ever eat non-kosher meat, they'll find a place for shechita, and then the people who would eat without shechita will go there because it'll be convenient. So that's what the letter writer is saying. So let's make sure there's a place that good people who would eat with shechita no matter where we put it will be able to go there. But even the people who would unfortunately eat non-kosher meat, unless we do this for them, they'll also have kosher meat to eat. However, the Avnezer says that the person who brought the letter to him, it said that there is a place outside the city for shechita. Now it's true that the kale hadat, that the people who are the courtiers in town, or the people who aren't so strict about things in town, so they don't want to walk so far, they will sometimes kill animals on their own or have somebody do it for them, but without shechita, and therefore it would seem to be a great mitzvah to give them the opportunity for shechita and to have it in town. So the other news says, but you have to think about this carefully, because since the government is only allowing shechita, it did not allow shechita in the open, it has to be in an enclosed building, and they built an enclosed building in this chatzer, so he thinks that they don't have to allow, that it can't be true that you have to allow for all this to take a share of the open courtyard and enclose it. And so you might think, well, they've already done it before. So he says, no, he doesn't think that when they did it before, they were being mochel on the hezek, that they were foregoing the problem of people coming in and out for this, because it's like a foul-smelling something in the courtyard, and people don't give up on that. So even though it was true that it did it for a long time, he's saying even the fact that they did it for a long time doesn't create a chazaka about it. It doesn't create a presumption. It doesn't create a right, in American law, it's called an estoppel or an easement. It doesn't create an accepted right that they can't go back on. So he thinks that basically Adam Ezra thinks there's another place you can do the shechita, and it's not a full mitzvah, because shechita isn't a full mitzvah because people don't fundamentally halachically need to eat meat, and therefore they can do without meat if they can get a shechita. So the rabbi is writing that you have these people who will unfortunately eat non-shechted meat, and that's a worry. The Ebenezer thinks it might be a worry, but it's not enough of a worry to get in the way of these people's right to object. He doesn't think the fact that there was a structure there before doesn't create a right to object. The fact it doesn't take away the right to object. So then he adds, "V'afal pishe dvar Torah einan yecholim chot nehazek nichnasim yotzim kidvar mitzvahim mikol makom d'mashe sagar makom la'atzmo yecholim chot." So you might have said, just the coming in and out wouldn't been good enough, because we say that if it's a mitzvah, the coming in and out is not good enough to object to, but the closing of the building, he thinks you're allowed to, and then along the way, you're also going to be able to ignore and to avoid the... You're going to be able to ignore and avoid the problem of people coming in and out. And none of that does he think there was an obvious mechila, there was an obvious foregoing of this, and therefore he thinks they still have this right. At the very last second, he says, the very end of the tshuva, he says, no, he thinks maybe it's not true. Maybe the takana of the chachamim, that when Chazal originally made this rule about neighbors, what they can and cannot for... Can object to, didn't include these mitzvahs, so maybe they can't object to this, but he thinks that Chachamim would not want him to object to this, because when you close this place, you didn't really object before, so we would assume that you don't really object now, and therefore he thinks the Shochtim do have a claim, and they should be able to build it. But even though it might be true that the din is with them, that they have the legal right, he thinks, and this is one of those situations where it would be preferable not to insist on following Torah law, because there's a larger public good question here, and it's also going to save Jews from eating the Baal Shem the other way around. I'm sorry, he stuck with himself the way he said. He didn't think they really had the right. He thought they could, but they shouldn't be machbid on it. They should let them rebuild the building, because even if it's al pi din, even though it's Alpidin, I think Alpidin at the end, he thinks they have the right to build it against the objections, but it would be better if they didn't and find someplace else within the city that they can take care of these things. So Nazir has helped us, has allowed us to review a couple of issues within Hilchot Shechinim, the laws of when neighbors are or are not allowed or able to object to the activities of others within their sort of shared communal space. When it comes to mitzvot in general, they're not allowed to object, and they have to bear the cost of it and bear the brunt of it because it's a mitzvah that's being done. But there are exceptions to that, and the Ebenezer seems to think that in a lot of cases, shechita would be an objectionable one, because shechita creates foul smell and people coming in and out and all those kinds of issues, and therefore, and shechit is not a full mitzvah. So therefore, I think fundamentally, the Avnezer held they shouldn't be allowed to do it, but then there were all sorts of other factors that came into play. So at the end, he thought that nobody in this situation should be standing on Din Torah, should be abiding purely by Torah law. They should rather find a way to have a place where they could do the shechita in an enclosed space that would be good for everybody and that would work out for everybody, so that everybody could have to come closest to getting all that they wanted. That is our response of the day for the first day of Elul. This is Gideon Rothstein, response of the day. Thanks for joining me. Hope to see you again soon. Take care. Bye.